You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ertz.
Well, thank you for joining us. I am Lindsay Ertz. Let's go Inside Utah Politics. Our program begins today with focusing on the growing pool of candidates for Utah's newly drawn 1st Congressional District. Now, the district presents Democrats with their first safe seat in Utah in decades, setting the stage for a hotly contested primary. In fact, we want to introduce you now to the newest candidate in the race as of right now. Joining me, welcome to the show, Senator Nate Bluin.
Thank you, Lindsay. Good to be here.
You're running.
I'm running. We are going to put my name in the race and get moving on December 1st is the real launch date for this campaign.
That's kind of a big deal. I mean, people, your name has been rumored for a long time. You've said for a while, I'm seriously considering it. But what was the impetus for getting in this race?
Yeah, it is such a challenging time for so many folks. And I'm really fed up with what we're seeing in D.C. and what we're seeing here in Utah. Folks my age are having a hard time getting by. We're seeing people spend the money that they would like to spend on a mortgage on childcare these days. We're seeing overreaches from our federal government. Just every day we've seen Trump making announcements about treasonous congressional Democrats and potentially political hangings. And I think that's just completely inappropriate. We need folks who are running for Congress to represent Utah that are going to push back on the majority that we have here in the state and the political climate that we have right now.
It wasn't the map that lends itself to a really easy Democrat seat that pushed you in a little bit.
So I know some folks were going to run for this seat no matter what. We got a really unexpected decision with that map last week. I was not expecting that. You know, my name had been out there as someone who was thinking about running. But having that map come forward with a district largely that I represent right now, I represent almost 20% of that district all the way from Salt Lake City down into Murray. And so I know those constituents and I represent the demographics that we see in the new district. So after having seen that map come out, I was really excited to put a campaign together, see if it was feasible. We spent a lot of time over the last few days building out a team that I think is going to be really exciting and is going to be able to run a really strong race here in Utah.
Where do you consider yourself on the spectrum of Democrats?
Yeah, I am a progressive. I've gotten great ratings from groups like Alliance for a Better Utah and Sierra Club, other folks like that, that are really pushing progressive social policy, environmentalism, causes like that. Those are the things I ran on back in 2022 when I beat a 36-year incumbent Democrat in a primary. So that is the voice I speak up for. I'm not afraid to go up against Democrats and the establishment when the time calls for it. And I want to keep representing those values in D.C. because I think we need a bit of a backstop here in Utah. We have a supermajority in the State House. We have a fully Republican congressional delegation. You know, we're seeing things like our air quality continue to be eroded. We just had a new decision from the EPA that I think is going to put less scrutiny on the state. So having folks that can step up to Congress and make sure that we're continuing to focus on those baseline issues that are going to impact Utahns is really important.
Do you think you can win on a message like that, though? Because to the old James Carville adage, it's the economy, stupid.
Yeah.
Like, can you run on environmentalism and progressive issues in Utah?
Well, look, we're going to focus on affordability, which is the buzzword right now. Everyone's talking about it. But I have a mortgage. I've had medical debt in the past. I've been on SNAP in the past. Those are things that I dealt with after moving to Utah when times were better, when you could find affordable housing here, when you could find childcare. And so I think those are going to be the issues that resonate, but certainly tying those to progressive messaging, environmental issues are public health issues. We can keep health costs down by addressing dust coming off of the Great Salt Lake, things like that. So I think those will resonate. Those are critical issues, and I'm not afraid to talk about them. And, you know, we saw this district has gone heavily for candidates like Bernie Sanders in the past. So these voters, you know about progressives and aren't afraid to shy away.
Do you plan to seek his endorsement?
I've had conversations with his team. You know, we'll see where that goes in the future. It was really exciting to have them here in Utah back in April. I was really fortunate and privileged to speak at that rally. It was one of the most exciting days in Utah politics. I actually looked back at some videos from that day and just had the biggest smile on my face, seeing all the energy from the folks that turned out that day. I've never seen anything like it in Utah. So I think people would respond well to that. And I hope we see some big names get involved and get to supporting me because I think that message is something that Utahns really want to hear more about.
You've been seen as a little bit of a firebrand in the Democratic Party here in Utah. Republicans don't often appreciate your style of communication. What do you want to say to that?
Yeah, I think people are looking for fighters right now. You know, we see overreaches again here in Utah, D.C. We've seen this fight over health care, and we saw Democrats cave on that issue. We saw 8 Democrats in the Senate cave on that issue, some in the House as well.
So you would have held on longer.
Oh, absolutely. I think that was the right fight. People want to see those subsidies extended. People want to see more than that. They want to see universal health care, Medicare for all.
Those are two things you support.
Absolutely. Yeah, we need to move in that direction. We need to we can lower costs for sure by going in that direction. We can, you know, take a broader base, lower costs, and get better health care for people. I don't think that's in question if you look at good economic data. So, yeah, back to the fighter question. Mm-hmm. I think that is something I've held on to here in Utah. That's a mantle I've taken up. It's not something I'm going to let go. The time calls for it when you have Republicans really making these crazy statements like we're seeing from Trump, like we're seeing from Burgess Owens on the decision by Judge Gibson. We just saw Representative Kennedy make a statement about using higher deductible health plans to make people more accountable for their personal health care decisions. I just don't think that's the right direction for the state. So I'm going to keep fighting back against those things.
Okay, so your time in the state Senate, you've been there for a few years, but you've not passed a single piece of legislation. You talk about that openly. How do you expect to get something done in Congress when you can't work with the Republicans here in Utah?
Yeah, I think there are a number of ways to do things. So here in Utah, I think if you ask the folks that are working on policies behind the scenes, the advocates on things like homelessness, on health care, on affordable housing, you're going to hear from folks that I work with that I am responsive, that I want to raise their concerns and maybe push the needle a bit. And if that doesn't lend itself to passing legislation in a supermajority red state, that's one thing. In Congress, Democrats are going to take back the House next year because we're going to have strong candidates on the ballot who are going to win a majority back. We're going to have the opportunity to do oversight in Congress to take on these corruption charges against Trump and other members of Congress and all of these sorts of things that are going on. And so that's a big deal, I think, to me, is having that opportunity to do oversight, to do accountability, to call out the issues as we see them, and then hopefully to win back the White House and the Senate in the near term and actually be able to advance big legislation that will help us here in Utah, things like funding for the Great Salt Lake, incentives for affordable housing, and again, things like Medicare for all.
Right, but you're saying you will work well when you have, because you're going to get a majority back in the House, but how do you work across the aisle? Because we just saw with the government shutdown, they needed 10 Democrats to come over and no one was willing to. How do you bridge that gap?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Democrats that went in that direction in that case were wrong, and we
but
did
how
not
do we get anything ever done if
yeah.
you have that, if that's the attitude?
I think bipartisanship is a means, not an end, and we need to focus on the end results. We need to get results for our constituents. I'm all for using bipartisanship when we can actually agree on issues, but compromising to the extent that I see, frankly, Democrats here in Utah compromising to get bills across the line and not getting as much as I think we deserve to be getting and that we need to be getting to keep our mouths shut on issues, that's a critical issue. And I think we need at least some people. I'm not saying everyone needs to take the same philosophy I do, but I do think it's important to push the needle in that way and have people from a red state in Congress that are willing to step up and speak truth to power.
We've got just about 20 seconds left. What would be your top priorities if you got into Congress?
Yeah, so accountability, making sure that we're taking on Trump and the tariffs and working towards affordability, environmental issues like the Great Salt Lake, like our air quality, and like clean and affordable energy for houses in Utah.
How do you work on federal lands issues in a district yeah. like one where there's barely any and the other Republicans are really dealing with the rural issues? They even want to claw back some of the lands from the federal government. Where do you stand there?
Yeah, I am a strong supporter of keeping those public lands in public hands, not selling them off to the highest bidder, not using them to develop big homes for rich people or sell off to extraction. Those are the reason I moved to Utah was to be close to public lands, to be able to recreate nearby to a thriving city.
Okay, but there are some parcels that butt right up to cities. Can we not work there to potentially sell off some of those lands, or is it just a hard and fast no for you?
I think the places where that would actually make a difference as far as reducing helping with affordability would be like here in Salt Lake County, and that would be talking about things like the Bonneville Shoreline Trail. I'm not going to compromise and sell off parcels that would impact some of the most critical lands for recreation here in the state. I know, you know, Senator Lee has had proposals about building homes on federal lands in different places, but he's talking about building homes in places that are miles and miles and miles from good jobs, good health care, and that sort of thing. So it's not actually going to help with affordability. It's not going to help create more homes for families here in Utah. So I think that's the issue.
Senator Nate Blewin, we're going to have to leave it there, but thanks for your time today, and good luck in the race.
Appreciate it. Thanks,
Lindsay. Thank you for coming here to talk about it. Appreciate it. All right, coming up still on Inside Utah Politics, Senator Kathleen Reby also joining the race for District 1. In fact, she was one of the first to get in. How she plans to carve out a lane in a field getting more crowded by the day. Continuing our coverage of the Democratic primary field in Utah's newly formed District 1, welcoming to the program State Senator Kathleen Reby. How are you?
Great. Thank you for asking.
It's good to have you here. You announced your campaign for Congress. You were the first person to get in, I think. I think I need to hear the motivations for running for this new district.
Yeah, I was the first person to get in. I always planned to run for this seat, depending on where the map was. And so I was all prepared to run for the last map, and now they presented this new map. So I just needed to kind of change a little bit. But as somebody who works in schools and works with families, I can see how much our families are struggling. So that was the catalyst for me to run for office.
You ran for Congress before, didn't win, obviously. But what? Why do it again? What's different this time?
Well, I learned a lot. I learned a few lessons, not a lot. But I think that it's a different population that I'll be running for. And I think it's important to build the bench, and it's also important to get to know people across the state and understand what's going on across the state. So that was what I learned from the last race. And so this race is going to be different. It's a different population. But the message is still the same. Families are important, healthcare is important, and making sure that our kids feel comfortable in schools.
Let's talk about healthcare for a second. What is your stance on healthcare? How do you believe our nation should do it? Affordable Care Act? Should we have Medicare for all? What is your stance on that?
Well, right now it's a little bit more dire because we are looking to make sure that our bills don't go up by double. You know, I mean, all these premiums are ready to go up, and so just trying to prevent that from happening. I believe the Affordable Care Act is a great option for many people, but also the fact that people need to stay at jobs just to keep their insurance is kind of alarming. You know, I have two kids, and I'm debating on whether what time I can retire depending on how much insurance they need. So
yeah,
it shouldn't dictate your life.
Interesting. So one of the sticking points during our recent shutdown was the Affordable Care Act subsidies. These were, expiring help, right, from the government to afford Obamacare. Would you have voted to shut down the government in order to defend these subsidies?
I would not have voted to open up the government because I believe that when a bully starts to hold you hostage, that you have to really fight back. The tax cuts that billionaires are getting are not helping the average citizen, and healthcare is so important to so many Americans that I think it's something that we should really work hard to maintain. So I would have held the line.
Some people see that as holding the American people hostage because they're the ones who lose when Congress doesn't work together. What do you want to say to that?
Well, you know, when Trump decides to take away SNAP benefits, that's not helping anybody either. And that wasn't even constitutional. So that went to the courts. So there is a process. There's safeguards in place. And so when you look at what's happening, I think it's just an egregious violation of all of our rights. We've all decided on how to run the government and what's okay and what's not. And he stepped over a line, and there's no reason why we should be backing down for unfair process.
So how long would you have held the line?
Hard to say. You know, how long would they hold the line? When would they decide that enough was enough to hurt the working class Americans and give billionaires a tax break?
Let's talk about another issue that may come up in Congress, and that is codification of Roe versus Wade. One of your opponents in this race, Ben McAdams, recently came out saying he would support codification. It's a little bit of a, I don't know if flip-flop is the right word, but it's a little bit different than his stance on abortion before. He's always kind of worked across the aisle in terms of being more pro-life. How do you see that issue, and would you vote to codify Roe?
I would vote to codify Roe, and I've never wavered on my support of reproductive care. As a mother, I had a medical emergency during my first pregnancy, which ended, and it was important for me to have the care that I needed. I met somebody in a parking lot after an event, and she told me that she had to wait in the parking lot until her symptoms got bad enough that she could get emergency health care. That is not what should be happening in the richest country in the world.
Republicans obviously see this issue very differently than Democrats. How do you deal with that pushback where people accuse you even of being okay with taking a life?
You know, I think that there's a lot of education that needs to go around that, around there. When you think about rape and incest and the state that has some of the highest sexual assaults in the nation, we have to provide safeguards for the females in our lives. And there just needs to be better education about that. I mean, it's a very sensitive subject and something that somebody should deal with their loved ones and their doctor. There are so many variables that go into that that I can't even... You can't legislate for all of them. So we need to have more understanding about what's actually happening and be a little bit more understanding and empathetic towards all the different strategies and emergencies that women have.
Another big piece of legislation in Congress this year was the One Big Beautiful Bill. That was a little bit of a difference of opinion on tax policy when it came to the Republicans. You know, really seeing that bill as not raising the taxes from 2017, that would have hurt a lot of Americans. Democrats obviously thought it added more to the deficit, that it shouldn't have. How do you see that bill? How would you have voted on it? And what pieces did you like and not like?
You know, when I think about the deficit, we are giving a bill to our kids and our grandkids that we cannot fulfill. That is something that I would never do to my own kids, and I think it's something that we really need to think about right now. The deficit is grown so high, it's actually changing our ability to bond. So I believe that adding anything to the deficit should be really cut out of a bill. The other thing about the big, beautiful bill, which is ironic, is that it's taking money away from our rural healthcare facilities. So here in the state of Utah, we had to backfill some of that lost funding just to make sure the people in our rural areas can get the healthcare that they need.
Let's talk about your time in the state Senate for a minute. You've been there since 2019.
Yep.
Correct me if I'm wrong. What has been the most important piece of legislation you believe you've passed?
As a super minority Democrat, it's not really easy to pass legislation, but as I go around the state and I work with agencies, they have said to me, you know, Kathleen, thanks for championing this event. So something that has been important to me is making sure that people that are trying to get back on track from being incarcerated have access to higher ed. And when I went there, they said that my advocacy for that increased the population that could apply for that. Search and rescue, something that I brought a lot of interest to, is now we have 3 helicopters that are all across the state. And so when you are in Moab and you're traveling down there from Salt Lake City, you can get the same continuity of care that you would get in Salt Lake City. Broadband internet across the state, something I've championed since I was on the state school board. There are pockets of the state that didn't have access to the internet and therefore didn't have access to telehealth, and that's something that I've championed. So being able to work behind the scenes to push very important ideas and ideologies is important to me. I've worked a lot with the rural caucus to make sure that I understand the difference between urban and rural challenges. And so I believe I've worked hard to reach across the aisle for many different issues.
Yeah, working across the aisle is something you're going to have to do when it comes to Congress, just depending on how the numbers shake out next year. But what has been your tactic with Utah's Republicans? Because I know that legislature, and it can be hard sometimes to be a super minority where, you know, you could get blocked at certain ways. So how do you become effective in a situation like that?
You know, being up there for this will be my 8th session, it's not about putting your name on something, it's about working behind the scenes to make sure that the policy is good. And so if we're going to create a bill, making sure there's amendments, talking to people that are running those bills, making sure that they understand how this might affect a different demographic and saying, you know, this is just a hole in your bill. Can you look to maybe fill that hole so we don't have to come back and fix it? And if it's a reasonable request and it makes sense, our legislators are really reasonable that way.
Will you give me your last 30 seconds on what you plan to tackle if you're elected to Congress? What are your priorities?
I really would like to keep working on health care, making sure that everybody has access to fair health care. I mean, it's been a lifesaver for me, and I think everybody should have that security. And then also making sure that when we are working with the Department of Education, we're doing it in a way that's responsible, that takes care of all of our special needs kids and IDEA.
This is our last 30 seconds for real this
time.
The district you're running in, some are saying it's very blue. Uh-huh. What lane do you fill in this election?
I don't really feel like you should be filling a lane. I think you should be genuine and be the person that you are. And people that.
But to win, you need a lane.
Well, my lane is to be the school teacher, moderator, person that understands what it's like to be a mother in a school and trying to make ends meet. So that's the lane. I don't know who's on the left of me or who's on the right of me, but that's where my lane is going to be.
All right, we'll leave it there. Senator Kathleen Reavy, good luck in this race. It'll be a year to watch.
Yes, it will
be
a year to watch.
For sure. All right. Well, coming up still here on Inside Utah Politics, Texas Republicans hit a snag in their redistricting push. A federal court has intervened in what that could mean for the balance of Congress. Stay with us.
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ayres.
Well, a federal judge blasted a Texas court for blocking the state's new maps for congressional districts. Our Washington correspondent, Vinay Simlot, explains the judge's decision and what lawmakers are saying about it.
A blistering dissent from one of the three judges overseeing the Texas redistricting case includes an old joke. What's the difference between God and a federal district judge? God doesn't think he's a federal judge. Circuit Judge Jerry Smith accused the two other judges on the panel of overstepping. They struck down Texas's new congressional map, arguing lawmakers drew it with race in mind.
I think the decision from the district court was wrong.
In July, President Donald Trump called on Texas lawmakers to draw five more Republican seats for Congress. In response, California voters elected to do the same for Democrats. Judge Smith wrote about the Texas court ruling. The main winners are George Soros and California Governor Gavin Newsom.
And he's an appellate judge who has a lot of respect among Supreme Court justices, which is one of the reasons I think it is very likely the Supreme Court will reverse this decision.
The new Texas map spread Democratic voters across Republican districts based on the swing of Hispanic voters toward Republicans in 2024. But some Democrats say that may backfire.
I mean, somebody's going to get fired.
Congressman Vicente Gonzalez is one of the Texas Democrats Republicans are targeting with redistricting. He says Hispanics swung back toward Democrats in elections this year.
Things are changing. Latinos are changing.
I think we're going to see some new members of Congress elected.
Senator Cruz says he thinks Republicans would benefit from maps drawn this year. Any appeal will be in the Supreme Court. In Washington, I'm Vinay Simlot.
Vinay, thanks. Well, as the days get shorter, debate over daylight saving time back on Capitol Hill. Lawmakers are considering the pros and cons of permanent daylight saving time versus standard time. Washington correspondent Maddie Beer Temple reports on the hearing.
Most Americans turned back their clocks earlier this month, even though lawmakers say
most people I talk to would like to have a set time that doesn't change.
But whether it should be permanent daylight saving time or standard time is the question.
It's time for us to decide on one standard and to just stick with it.
The National Golf Course Owners Association says most of its members want permanent daylight saving time.
Our point of sale data shows afternoon and evening hours generate 40% more revenue per hour than the morning play.
CEO Jay Caron says the extra light later in the day is good for business and Americans' health.
The economic opportunity is tens of millions of dollars. It also gets people outside recreating together. The social and mental health benefits of golf are well documented.
But University of Kentucky professor Tyler Kleppe says the circadian disruptions tied to it could have serious downsides for health and the economy.
Permanent standard time is better for our cognitive function.
There are currently four bills in Congress dealing with daylight saving time, some leaving it up to the states.
The Sunshine Protection Act, co-sponsored by Indiana Congresswoman Erin Houchin, would make daylight saving time the standard.
Putting that extra hour of light where families can actually use it in the evening.
So far, 19 states have passed laws to make daylight saving time permanent, according to the National Conference of State Legislatures. But Congress has to pass its own bill for those to take effect. In Washington, I'm Maddie Beer Temple.
Maddie, thanks. Well, that does it for today's Inside Utah Politics. Stay in touch with us on social media. You can find me on X, Threads, and Instagram. Search for Lindsay on Air, Lindsay spelled with an A. I do respond to a lot of comments, by the way. You can also find Inside Utah Politics in podcast form wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're looking for more national political coverage, check out our political power ranker. Our next star national political director and the head of Emerson College Polling look at who's up and who's down in the world of politics based on the data. We carry that show for you on our free streaming app, which is called News for Utah Plus. You can download that on Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV. We also have much more behind-the-scenes content there. Well, thanks for joining us. We will see you next week.